Virginia here at the bottom of Lamed Bet Amud Bet, but the two dots. The Gemara quotes from the Mishnah, Kutim mitami mishkav tachton ke'el yom. That the Kutim are mitame the mishkav tachton, the lower one, like the elyon, like the top one. We explain the Mishnah like the Havamina of the Gemara, which is my mishkav tachton ke'el yom. What does that mean? Ileima hai de'ika yud matzot. He has 10 mattresses. V'yativ alayu. And he sits on them. Mitamuluhu. He's mitamei all of them. Which is the din of mishkav, moshav, midras, hazav. If he sits on top of something, lays on top of something, doesn't matter how many items are below, even if there are 10 mattresses below him, the top mattress and the bottom mattress have the same din as far as the tumah is concerned. And there's no difference between the top and the bottom. Is that the meaning of mishkav tachton ke'elyon? The lowest mattress has the same din as the upper mattress. Mar says, shita, I don't need a Mishnah to tell me that. Daha doris lahu. Because he either stood on them, it could be tumat midras that they're saying over here. Tumat midras includes mishkav, moshav, laying down, sitting, walking on. All of those things are dinei tumat hazav, which have impact in terms of whatever is below him. That's a din that's clear, and if he has a din like his boel nida, then it would make sense that that would be the case. Ella shehei tachtono shel boel nida kelyono shel zav. So the Gemara says the meaning of this phrase in the Mishnah is that the tachtono shel boel nida, that which is below a boel nida, has the same din as that which is above the zav. Ma'el yono shel zav enu mitamei ele ochlim umashkim. That which is above the Zav is only mitamei ochlim umashkim. That's only effective in terms of tumah to impact on ochlim umashkim, which means it's a rishon the tumah. Af tachtono shel boel nida, so do that which is under the boel nida, enu mitamei lo ochlim umashkim. Only has impact on ochlim umashkim, it's only a rishon the tumah. As opposed to what is below the Zav, or what's below the nida, that has a din like an avatumah. It's mitamei adam, it's mitamei kelim, bigadim. It has impact on all those items because it's an avatuma. This, which is found below the bol nida, is only a din of rishon utuma. It affects ochlim mashkim, similar to elyono shel zav, like which is above the zav. And of course, the Gemara now will explain to us what is elyono shel zav. Where do we know that from? And where is tachtono shel bol nida? And where do we know that from? So they are looking at the phrase in the Mishnah as hakutim itamim mishkav tachton kelyon. It's not referencing to that which is below the kuti, that which is below the boel nida, but rather as a way to compare the tachton, that which is underneath the boel nida, ke'elyon, like something else that is above, and that's above the zav, that's the tuma. What it means in terms of elyono shel zav is not defined anywhere. Tosafot brings from the Rashbam, says, well, you know, shel zav mifaresh Rashbam, shechriya hazav b'kaf maznayim, et ochlim mashkim shem kaf shnia. It was a scale, and the scale had on one side food and drink, on the other side was the zav pushing down on it. And that's called, oh, you know, shel zav, according to the Rashbam. And Tosafot says over there, v'lo nehira. I don't think that's right, because he says that's called hesed. Hesed is when you move the object through another means. You use a stick to move something. Here you're using the scale to move the ochlim mashkim. That's called hesed. And tumat hesed is clear in the Torah, and has nothing to do with el yono shel zav. So he says, benira. So he says, I think this is what it means, that el yono shel zav is hainu beged, shemiksato al hazav, umiksato nigrar al haaretz. The case where he has a cape or sheet on his back, and half of it is on his back, and the other half is dragging on the ground. And that's not hesed. Because when you do hesed, you have to move the entirety of the item. Since you're moving the entirety of the item, it's as if you touched it, and that's what hesed is. But the case here, where half of it's on the ground, half of it's on your shoulder, then you're only moving a portion of it, even though you pulled the drag the whole thing along, still you're not moving kikulo, you're not moving the entire object, which is on you, you're not raising the entire object. And therefore, that's called elyono shel zav. That's the way the Balei HaTosafot would explain it. The Tosfot Arosh over here in our sugyo also brings a similar structure as to the Tosfot of the Rashbam and rejecting it and the answer of the Tosfot. But then he brings the Inami. Shetzba'o shel zav tachat anidbach. The finger of the zav is below the bricks or the row of bricks. Ochlim umashkim al gabav. Then above the bricks are ochlim umashkim. So that is called el yono shel zav, and it's mitameh the ochlim umashkim above. even though he never moved the brick, even though he didn't do anything that's called hesait over here, nevertheless, just being the fact that his finger, his hand is underneath the row of bricks, and there's something on top, that's called el yino shelzav. That's the way that Baya Tosafot, the Tosafot Rosh, read it. The premise of their understanding is that hesait and el yino shelzav have to be different things. And so given that, whatever the Rashbam explained, he thinks is hesait, and therefore it can't be what we're speaking about here of el yino shelzav. Whereas the answers that they give differentiate it from hesed. The Ramban over here says that El Yino Shel Zav is hesed azav. It's just the extension of hesed azav, which is that when you have the hesed azav, he only affects the object that he's in contact with or that he's touching. There are other objects above it, and that's what the Ramban calls El Yino Shel Zav. It's basically the hesed of his hesed. It's a derivative hesed. Somehow he's causing movement in the object, even though he may not be touching it directly. That's called hesed. Other objects that are moved by that object, that's called hesed to hesed, and that's how you know shelzav. That's the way that Ramban explain it, and that's how they then defend the position of the Rashbam, which is that, yes, that is hesed, but it's hesed that is affecting the scale, and then the scale is affecting the ochlim u'mashkim. By doing that, it's indirect hesed, and that's what's called el yino shelzav. That's what we're saying here, that a boil nida, when he sits on something, when he lays on something, that which is below him does not have tuma like a nida. Now that's important, because we're going to see in a second that the psukim indicate that whatever happens to the nida is true of a bol nida. A person who sleeps with the nida has the same tuma as a nida. If that were true, then just like when a nida sits on something, sleeps on something, lays on something, then everything that's below her has a din of avatuma, then so too should be true by a bol nida. But the fact is that we don't look at it that way. There's a differentiation, and that's what the Mishnah is indicating to us, that the Takhtono Shel Bol Nida is similar to El Yuno Shel Zav, that which is above the Zav, which is a lighter form of Tuma, than that which is found below the Zav. And so that's what the Gemara is now going to discuss. How do we know what the Tuma is of El Yuno Shel Zav? How do we know what the Tuma is of Takhtono Shel Bol Nida? It says, El Yuno Shel Zav Minalan. The El Yon of Zav, where do we know that from? Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, the way that the Gemara reads now is according to Rashi and the Girsa of Rashi. We'll come back in a second, explain what the deficits are in this explanation, and then how the Baalei Tosafot explain it. They're quoting a Pasuk, you can see on the website, you can get the Psukim, I have them listed out from Perek Tet Vav. In Vayikra, all the psukim there, that's what we're going to be discussing over the remainder of today's daf. The pasuk that they're referencing to is in Perek Tevav, pasuk yud, which is speaking about a zav. And a zav, it says, v'chol nogea, v'chol asher yeh tachtav. If a person who touches anything that is below him, itma ad arev, they'll be tamei until the sun sets. V'noseh otam, and anybody who carries them, yichabes bigadav, he'll have to launder his clothing, v'chatz b'mayim, it goes to the mikveh, v'tamei ad arev. So you have two parts to the pasuk. You have nogeya and you have a nosei. The nogeya part of the pasuk says that he is tamei ad ha'arev, and that's it. Whereas the nosei aspect of it is to not only is he tamei, his clothing that was on him is tamei, and he has to go to the mikveh in these cases, and he's tamei ad ha'arev. That's the pasuk yud, divides it up between nogeya and nosei. And the Gemara says, what is the meaning of that pasuk? Does it says b'chol nogeya b'chol sheyet tachtav yitma? My tachtav. What is the meaning of the word tachtav here? Ilema tachtav dezav. If you think that is which is below the zav, that we already addressed in the psukim earlier. Back in pasuk hey, in Perek Tevav, it says, v'ish asher yigam b'mishkavo. Person who touches that which the zav laid on, yichabes b'gadav, v'chatz b'mayim etamei ad arev. So then we know what the din is with regards to something that's underneath the zav. So this clearly can't be speaking about the mishkavo, or that which is beneath the zav, because we know that miish asher yigav mishkavo nafka. Ela, hanogea b'kol asher yazav tachtav. They're reinterpreting the word tachtav not to be that which is below the zav, but that which the zav is below. And so that's the meaning of the tachtav here. B'kol nogea asher ayeh tachtav, that anything that you touch that he is under, then itma, that'll be tamei. My nehu. So what is that the Zav is under? That's called El Yono Shel Zav, El Yon Shel Zav. Rashi eliminates the next line in the Gemara. That's why it's in parentheses over here. But it's still around because the Baalei Tosafot think it is necessary to be in the Gemara. Gemara says, Nitko akatuv mitumah chamura, ve'vi odidei tumah kala. So the Pasuk took it away from being the more chamur tuma and brought it to a tuma kala to say that it's a lighter form of tuma. Lomar lacha, to teach you. Sheinu mitamei elo ochlimu mashkim, to tell you that it only has the impact of touching, of affecting ochlimu mashkim. Rashi points out that the Gemara's conclusion from that is from the fact that it splits the Pasuk. Pasuk says in Pasuk Yud again, v'chonu gea b'chol eshiyah tachta b'itma d'aref, that's one din. That if he carries them, then he's not only tamei, but the clothing on him is also tamei. That is a higher level of tumah. A higher level of tumah is when you come into contact with something, you carry something, and not only does it affect you, it affects all the clothing that you're wearing, and you're all tamei'im. If it's a lower form of tumah, it only affects the individual, it doesn't affect the clothing. That's generally a difference between nogeya and nosei, between touching and carrying. Carrying is a higher level of tumah generally, and then carrying includes not only the person being tamei, but also his begadim being tamei. The fact that the pasuk separated between these two dinim and did not combine them and say there's one halacha for the beginning and the end of the pasuk tells you that the beginning of the pasuk has a different halacha. And that's what the Gemara is saying. The beginning of the pasuk is nitkoa katuv mitumah chamura, took it away from tumah chamura. Meviol the day tumah kala and said it has a lighter form of tumah. So that tells you that it's only mitamei ochlimu mashkim, that the elyono shalzav only is larishon the tumah and only affects ochlimu mashkim. Mar says, imar nitkoa katuv mitumah chamura. So okay, I understand that the pasuk took it away from tumah chamura, which is the latter half of the pasuk. Delo mitamei adam letamei begadim, so that the person doesn't come tamei to affect his clothing. Aval adam obigadim litamei. Why don't you just say that it's a lighter form of tumah that can only affect that person or affect his bigadim? It doesn't affect the person to affect his clothing, but each one independently, clothing or person, it could affect. That would be a lower form of tumah, distinct from the latter half of the puzzle that says that when he carries it, that he's not only he is the tamei, but his bigadim are tamei. In the first part of the puzzle, it'll be either he is tamei or his bigadim are tamei, but it will not be just ochlimu mashkim that it is mitamei. Amar kra yitma. The pasuk over here says, yitma adarev, that yitma is tuma kala b'mashma. That yitma is a lighter form of tuma. The way that they explain it is that the word yitma is a reference to that which became tamei. So cholonugea asher yetachtav yitma, anything that's there will become tamei. That object that is tamei affects other things. Now that object becomes tamei and affects other things is only a rishon l'tuma, because the object is a abba tuma, that's a rishon l'tuma. It only affects ochlim u'mashkim. So the idea would be that the tachtav is connected to that yitma, and that they're basically carving out that part of the pasuk to say that b'chol negeh asher b'yeh tachtav yitma da'aref, they're saying that tachtav yitma da'aref, that anything that he is under will be tamei until the evening, and that yitma is a reference to the earlier part of the pasuk, which is v'chol negea, that which touched the sheir tachtav yitma becomes tamei. That is a, as we're going to see in a second, the pasuk is referencing to write what's written right before it, which is v'chol merkav asher yikav alav hazav yitma. Anything that the zav rides on, that will have tuma. And then if you touch that which he rode upon, for instance, he sat on a saddle, and then you touch that saddle, you're going to become tamei because merkav hazav is tamei avatuma. And so that avatumah will touch something and make it a rishon the tumah. That rishon the tumah is what tachtav is referencing to. The elyono shel zav, yitma, will be affected just like the way that something that touched merkav zav is affected. That means it's only a rishon the tumah, and it only affects ochlim umashkim. That is the drusha, according to Rashi, in the psukim. Bali Tosafot are incredulous as to Rashi's explanation, and they even mention the fact that Chazer bo Rashi miyagirsuzo. Rashi changed his mind about it later on. The way that the Tosafot Rosh quotes it is that in a tshuva of Rashi, he explains the Gemara differently. And in that explanation, the Bali Tosafot feel that there is a lot more to make out of this pasuk. The first criticism that Tosafot have on this is the pasuk itself that we read in Pasuk Yud is speaking about Merkav Hazav. It's speaking about a Zav riding on something. And then immediately afterwards it says, b'chol enogea, b'chol asher yeah tachtav, yitma da'arev. If you touch that which he wrote upon, then you'll be tamei until the erev. But nosei otam, and someone who carries them, will not only he be tamei, but yichabes begadav, b'chatz b'mayim tamei ad'arev. his clothing will also be tamei. And the Midrashei Halacha are clear in Torah Kohanim that that pasuk Yud is speaking about Merkava Zav. So where do you come off saying that it's talking about Elyono Shel Zav if the pasuk itself almost seems clear that it is because it's subsequent to pasuk Tag, which says V'chol Merkava Sheri Kavala Vazav Yitma, and then it tells you right afterwards if you touch it or you carry it, it's obviously referencing back to the Merkava Zav. That's the case. What does this have to do with Elyono Shel Zav whatsoever? That's the first criticism the Bayit Tosafot have. The second criticism they have is the Gemara here is a Havamina, that the Pasuk Yud here is talking about Mishkav Hazav. It's talking about something that a Zav laid on. Tosafot says, how could you even say that? It is so clear, first of all, that it's not talking about Moshe Voshel Zav, because you have a Pasuk before, the Pasuk that the Gemara quotes, which is, Kasher Yigab B'Mishkavo Yechabes B'Dav V'Chadz B'Mayim Tamei Arif. And the pasuk here is clearly talking about Merkav and not Moshkav and Moshav. So how does the Gemara even have a Havamina? That's number one. Number two is the din of Mishkav Azav is that if you touch it, not only are you Tameh, but your Begadim are Tameh. And here the halacha is, only the person is Tameh, not his clothing. So where would you ever have a Havamina at this pasuk speaking about Moshav or Mishkav Hazav? That's the second criticism. His third criticism of this is, how could it be that it's speaking about Ochlim Mashkim? Because the Pasuk says, Yitma Ad Arev. You're only Tameh until the evening, which means you go to the mikveh, sun sets, and you're Tahor. That only true by Adam and Kelim. Ochlim and Mashkim that become Tameh, they can never be made Tahor again. You can't take Ochlim and Mashkim and put them in the mikveh and make them Tahor. So what is the meaning of the Pasuk? Yitma Ad Arev. It's only Tameh until the evening. Makes no sense, the Bali Tosafot say, to say it's speaking about Ochlim and Mashkim. So for that reason, the Bali Tosafot reject this view of Rashi and the explanation of the Gemara. The last piece is the fact that Rashi eliminated from the Girsa the Hanosei and Nisa, which is the parentheses that we skipped before, which was found in all the Gemaras. And Rashi eliminates it from the Girsa. Now, the Bali Tosafot admit that there's a serious problem with the Drasha, and that is that the way that the Gemara says it's written in the Pasuk is not the way we have it written in our Torah. Our Torah has the word written differently than what the Gemara is quoting. Tosafot says that's not surprising. There are a number of places in Shas where the Gemara seems to quote a drasha from a pasuk and a word in a pasuk, and they spell the word differently. That our Masorah is different than the Masorah that the Gemara is quoting, and that the words are actually letters are different in the Torah. And he says this is one of those cases, but he doesn't want to eliminate it from the Gemara because he thinks it's integral to the drasha. So he brings the alternate drasha. He, in the end, does go back and defend Rashi's position, but he does it in a much different way that's really closer to the way that he explains the Gemara. So the way that the Tosafot explains it is that the word Hanosei that's found in the transition in the Pasuk, in Pasuk Yud, it says, then it says, V'hanosei otam yichabez begadav rechatz b'mayim tamei ad arev. So the question of what is the word Hanosei? The Gemara over here says, and that's in the parentheses that we skipped, V'hanosei nami yitma, mai nihu nosei. What does the word nosei mean? Nisa. My taima. How do you know it means nisa? Because he nisa k'tiv. Chaser. It's written without a vav in it. And since it's written without a vav, you can read it as nisa rather than nosei. So hanosei otam is the one who carried them. Them is the merkav that was mentioned in the previous pasuk. But if you take out the word otam and you just read the word nosei without the vav in it, it says v'hanisa. That which was above, or that was carried by, which is what we are trying to describe here as Elyono Shel Zav, something that was above the Zav. That drosha is the key element of Elyono Shel Zav, and Tosafot says it derives from this drosha of Nosei spelled as Nisa, and therefore Nisa is the key element of the drosha. Again, the Bali Tosafot will point out, in our Torah, it has it with the Vav. So that's the only difficulty here, but the Gemara clearly thinks it's without a Vav. And therefore they drash in that Hanisa. And this is how he explains it. He says here, Torah Kohanim explains the Pasuk as dividing between Nogea and Nosei, and is referencing back to Merkava Zav. So it says the one who's Nogea has a din that he is Tameh. The one who's Nosei is that he's Tameh, and his Begadim are Tameh. Then, the Elyono Shel Zav comes from the fact that the word Nosei is written Chaser, and that means Nisa, and it's going back on the beginning of the Pasuk. The Vini Pasuk says Itma, and it doesn't have Kibbutz Begadim. And so the way to read it is, Kol Negei Asher Yeh Tachtav Itma Ad Arev, and then also it will be, itma arev vanisa. And also, the El Yenoshel Zav is also itma. And then you have a third part of the puzzle, which is venosei otam yichaveis begadav. So they parse the puzzle into three sections. There's a nogeya in the beginning. Then there is the nisa in the middle. And then there's hanosei in the end. Now, it's true that the word nosei and nisa are the same word in the puzzle, but they're reparsing the puzzle to read vachonogeya sheyeh tachtav itmar arev. That's one din. There's also a din of itmar arev vanisa. And then there's a third din, which is hanosei otam yichaveis begadav rechatz b'mayim. That way you get the two drashot of Torah Kohanim, Nogeya b'merkav azav, Nosei merkav azav, but you also get our drashot, which is El Yono Shel Zav. So then the Gemara asks, I understand how you reparse the pasuk now, but then what do you do with Idmad Arev v'anosei? What do you do with the fact that it's talking about the tuma of the first half of the pasuk? In the first half of the pasuk, the tuma there is an ava tuma. It affects Adam. It makes an Adam tamei. And that would imply that Idmad Arev v'anisa is also, well, you know, Shel Zav should also have that same level of Tuma. The way you would have read it is Itmad Arev Vanisa, which would imply that there's Tumat Adam from this, even by El Yono Shel Zav. Mar says you read it wrong. The Itma is Tuma Kala, because what's the Itma in the Pasuk? It says, anything that you touch that was Merkav Azav, Yitmad Arev. That object is Tameyad Arev. That object is a Rishon the Tuma. The Merkav Azav is an Ava Tuma. That object is a Rishon the Tuma. That Itmad Arev Hanisa. That's what's connected to the El Yono Shel Zav. The object that became Tamei from the Merkav Azav, because of touching the Merkav Azav, that Itmad Arev, that Itma is Nisa. That's what the Tuma is of El Yono Shel Zav, and that is a Rishon the Tuma. That's how the Gemara reads. Tosafot does seem to eliminate the Tachtav aspect of the Gemara, and he says he thinks Rashi took that out as well. Our Rashi has it in, but he says this Rashi in the Tshuva also took out the whole Tachtav Shel Zav, and Me'ish Sheishka Mishkavo Nafka, because none of that is meaningful in this instance over here, because we're not speaking about the Tachtav, it's not the Drusha. The Drusha comes from Nisa and not from Tachtav. That's the way the Balei Tosafot read the Gemara in order to get to that conclusion. They then go back to the Rashi and say, even according to Yashi, Mio Yeshli Asheva Girsa Rishona. Even according to the first Girsa that has the word Tachtav as being the source for El Yono Shel Zav and not the word Nisa, he says, I can explain that too by saying that had you just had the word Tachtav, then I wouldn't have known that that meant El Yono Shel Zav. And the Gemara asks, Ilema Tachtav the Zav, if you think it's speaking about the Moshava Zav, we could have learned that from the other Pasuk above. And even though you could have asked many other questions, as the Balei Tosafot pointed out, with regards to that, said the Gemara just asked one question to eliminate that line of thought, but there were other things you could have asked to eliminate that Hava Mina, and then Gemara moves on to saying that Tachtav can't be about underneath the Zav, but rather that the Zav is underneath something else. I needed the word Nisa, Anosei Nisa, to teach me that Tachtav was El Yono Shel Zav. Because if there was just the word Tachtav, we wouldn't have invented a new form of Tuma just because the word Tachtav. We would have just read Tachtav being the Merkav Hazav, that which was underneath the Zav in the previous Pasuk. But now that I have the word Nisa over here, that reflects back on the word Tachtav to teach me that it is not the Tachtav, that which is under the Zav, but Tachtav means what the Zav is under. And that I learn out from the word Nisa, which then is Mareh on the word Tachtav, that there is a new form of Tuma here, which is this concept of called Nisa. And then, from the word Nosei or Nisa, I can't learn out Tuma Kala, because Nosei Otam Yichabes Begadav Rechatz B'mayim clearly is Tuma Chamura. So I need it from the word Tachtav, which is earlier in the Pasuk, which is in the area that is Tuma Kala. So between the two words, I can come to the conclusion. And that's how Tosafot then reconciles Rashi's Girsa to say the source of El Yono Shel Zav is Tachtav. But I still need that drusha that Rashi took out of the Gemara and put in parentheses, Hanisa. Hanisa tells me that Tachtav means El Yono Shel Zav. But I couldn't use the word Nisa alone to teach me that, because Nisa is in the second half of the Pasuk, which has Tuma Chamura. So I need the word Tachtav, which is in the first half of the Pasuk, which is Tuma Kala. And so between the two of them, I can come to this conclusion that El Yono Shel Zav has Tuma Kala. That is the view of the Balei Tosafot, both in bringing in alternate pshat, which they claim is in Tshuva Drashi, as well as trying to defend the original Girsa of Rashi, but he does not follow Rashi entirely, because Rashi over here says about the Girsa that's in parentheses, Lo Yadana Mahi, I have no idea what it is. Neiri Ve'enai Shu Perish Mishubash. And I think it's a problematic explanation of the Gemara. So Rashi clearly eliminates that from the Girsa. Tosafot says you can't eliminate from the Girsa, because the way you explained the Gemara, as we noted already, has a number of problems with it, Rashi's explanation. And Tosafot says in the end, Rashi did retract this position and explain it like we saw in the Bali Tosafot. But then the Bali Tosafot go back and help to understand how, even according to the way we have it in our Gemara, that the word Tachtav could be the source together, combined with the word Nisa, and you would have to then not eliminate this from the Girsa, because that would be important in describing that which happens here. And again, the word Tachtav would be El Yono Shel Zav, and Yitmad Arev would be that it's Tamei, like the object that touched the things that were underneath the Zav. Just like the objects that touch the things that are under the Zav, the Merkava Zav, are Rishon Tuma, so too Tachtav, which is governed by the word Nisa, to Tilchus and El Yono Shel Zav, they have the same tuma as things that come into contact with that which is under the Zav, and that's a Rishon Tuma. That's the explanation of the first half of the Gemara. Now, Tachtono Shel Bol Nida Minolon. How do we know that that which is under the Bol Nida has the same din as El Yono Shel Zav? Well, we know what El Yono Shel Zav is in terms of tuma. It's a Rishon Tuma. That's meant to make Oflim Mashkim. How do we know that which is underneath the Bol Nida has the same din? The Tanya, because the Pasuk says, again, in Perek Tevav, Pasuk Chav Dalet, describing the Bo'el Nida, Im Shachov Yishkav Ish Ota, a person sleeps with her, her meaning the Nida, V'tihi Nida Ta'ala, he becomes like her, a Nida, V'tamei Shivat Yamim, and he has Tumah for 7 days, Chom Yishkav Asher Yishkav Alav Yitmah, and anything he lays on top of will have a din of Tumah. Now Gemara says, Yachol Yale L'Ragla, you would think he becomes like her, because that's what it says, U'tihi Nida Ta'alav. Her nida is what affects him, and he becomes tamei with her nida. But her nida, she could be in the 5th day of her nida, being tumat nida, and then he is boeler. If he becomes like her, he only needs 2 more days until the tumah is gone. So you would have thought he becomes exactly like her, and that means whatever she is up to in her count of nida, that's what he is. She's 3 days into her nida, he's 3 days into his nida as well, and then you have 4 days left, just like she does. So that's what the Gemara says, Tamad Omar, V'tamei, it's a misquote over here, V'tamei Shivat Yamim, that he's Tamei for 7 days. So that's irrespective of what the Nida is, he has din of 7 days on his own, and anytime he's Tamei from Bol Nida, he has 7 days. Ma Tamalomar Utzi Nida Ta'alav, then what do you do with the Nida Ta'alav? The bad part of the puzzle says that he's like her. Sheyachol Lo Yitma Adam Ukli Cheres, you would think the Bol Nida is not the level of Tuma for which he will affect an Adam. That means that he's no geba adam, he's an abba tuma, and he can infect adam, as well as a kli cheres, which is something that can't become tamei b'nigia, because it's kli cheres is only kabel tuma, internally, not externally. So if you touch it, it doesn't become tamei. So the reference over here, kli cheres, is tuma heseit, where you move the kli cheres, because that's what the Gemara says about heseit. What is a davar that is like magakulo, as if you touch the old object? Zeheseito, that's the moving of the object. When you move the object, you move all parts of the object. That's why Tosafot before said Heseit means you have to carry the entire object, can't be a part of it on the ground. So here, Heseit is Kli Cheres, will make it Tamei. That means you can be Tamei Adam, and you can be Tamei Kelim, that means you're an Av HaTuma. Tamalomar Uti Nidata Alav. Mahi Mitama Adam Ukli Cheres. Just like she, a Nida, is an Av HaTuma, and affects another individual. Or a kli cheres, avu mitamei adam kli cheres. So too, the bol nida himself is an ava tuma, and he affects other people, makes them into rishon the tuma, or he can affect a kli cheres that he is mesit, that he moves, that will also be impacted by him because he's an ava tuma. Tosafot over here discusses why they picked these two objects as being the examples as to the fact that they are mitamei ke ava tuma. And that's because there are other things by Nevela that don't have this din. They don't affect Adam, and they don't affect Kli Cheres. So the Gemara uses those because those are examples of items that are not affected in other areas of Tumah. Here they are affected, and that's because he's deemed an Ava Tumah, like she is. Imahi osa mishkav moshav l'tamei Adam l'tamei bigadim. Well, just like her, when she sits on something, or she lays on something, they have the din like her. They become an Av HaTumah. This is called Midras Nida. that which Nida sits on, lays on, she affects them to the point where they are in Avatuma. And that's what we said before with regards to the Tachtav Shel Zav. That which is under the Zav becomes Tamei Tumat Av Hatuma. That is true of a Nida as well. In the Parshiyah Nida, it says, Kol Asher Tishkav Alav Yidinata Yitma. Kol Asher Teshev Alav Yitma. And then, V'chol Nogeya B'mishkava. Anybody who touches that which she laid on, or touches that which she sat on, Yichabes Begadav Rechatz B'mayim Tamei Adarev. He's Tamei, and his clothing is Tamei. So you see here that that which she sat on, or laid on, is an Avatuma, because it can affect an Adam. Only an Avatuma can affect Adam. So you would think, Afu, Se Mishkav Moshav L'Tamei Adam L'Tamei Begadim. You would think the same thing with regards to this Boel Nida, that which he sat on, that which he laid on. He's exactly like the Nida, to be an Avatuma. Tamalomar, the last line of the pasuk that we quoted before is, Kol Mishkav, Asher Yishkav Alav, Yitma. That which he lays on will be Tamei. Shein Tamalomar. You didn't need to write that. You already told me he's exactly like a Nida. Exactly like a Nida, we already quoted the Psukim, what happens to the Moshav and Mishkav of a Nida. Then why do I need you to tell me the same thing by a Bol Nida? So what's the extra pasuk? What's the extra language for? Tamalomar. So why does it say, Kol Mishkav, Asher Yishkav Alav, Yitma? Uma Tamalomar. Shein Tamalomar. It didn't need to say, V'chol Mishkav Asher Yishkav Alav Yitma, Uma Talma Nomar. Therefore, why did it write, V'chol Mishkav Asher Yishkav Alav Yitma, Nitzkoa Katu, Mituma Chamura, Ve'evil Lidei Tuma Kala. To tell you that the Mishkav and Moshav of a Boel Nida are different than the Mishkav and Moshav of Nida, to lower the level of Tuma. Lomar Lecha Hashem, Enei Metamei Lofli Mashkim. It only affects food and drinks, which means it's a Rishon the Tuma, not an Abba Tuma. How do you know that it is Tumakala to the point where it is a Rishon the Tumah, not an Avatumah? Let us say, Taloni Tamei Adam, the Tumei Begadim. Maybe it's not like the Mishkav, the Moshav, the Nida, whereby when you come into contact with them, not only are you Tamei, but everything you're wearing becomes Tamei. So let's see over here. He has a lighter form of Tumah, the Balabol Nida, that when you touch it, he becomes Tamei, but not his clothing. Or if his clothing touched it, they'd be Tamei and not him. There would be a lower form of Tumah, because it wouldn't be Tamei Begadim that are on him. It would only affect objects that came into direct contact with the items. That is a lower form of Tumah than Nida, but that would not be all the way down to the form of a Rishon the Tumah. Aval Adam would be Begadim li Tamei. At least Adam would be Begadim independently, it should make them Tamei. Amar Avasi, Yitma. The Pasuk says Yitma, Tulema Kala Bemashma. The word Yitma at the end indicates a lower form of Tuma, and that's again what we said before. Kol Mishkav Asher Yishkav Alav Yitma. So Yitma means that they are Tamei, like the way that when he touches something, it becomes Tamei. When he touches something, he's an Abba Tuma, he makes it into a Rishon the Tuma. So the Mishkav Asher Yishkav Alav Yitma will be similar to the Tuma that he causes when he comes into direct contact with an item. That is a Rishon the Tuma. So too the Mishkav Moshav of a Boel Nida are Rishon the Tuma. So there's our explanation of the Mishnah now. The Mishnah that says that the Boel Nida that sits or lays on something is Ke'el Yono. El Yono Shel Zav. Just like the things that are above the Zav only become a Rishon the Tuma to be Metamei Ochlim Mashkim, so too the things beneath a Boel Nida are only a Rishon the Tuma in order to be Metamei Ochlim Mashkim. And that's the explanation of the Mishnah, the line of the Mishnah that says Hakutim, who we think are Bolei Nida, Mitamei Mishkav Tachton, Kelyon. That which is below them has the din like the Elyono Shalzav, which means it's a Rishon the Tuma, and it's Mitamei Uchlim Umashkim. Ema, Uti Nidata Alav Klal. Why don't you say that the Pasuk breaks down like this? It says, Uti Nidata Alav, he becomes like a Nida, and then afterwards it says, B'chol Mishkav, Asher Yishkav Alav Yitma. So then it's a Prat. Klal Uprat, Ein Bechlal Amashim Beprat. When you have a general statement, a generic statement, and then a particular statement, the particular statement qualifies the generic statement. It says that's all that matters over here. Mishkav Moshav in Midiach Rinalo. Let us say that he has a din of Mishkav Moshav, but nothing else like a Nida, because the Tehina Da'ata Alav is qualified by the end of the Pasuk. That'd be very limiting in terms of what the Tumah of a Bol Nida would be. Samar Abaye, that you can't do. It says, Vitamei Shivat Yamim in between. Says Utini that Alav, then interrupts with Betamei Shivat Yamim, and then it says B'chol Mishkav Asher Yishkav Alav Itma. That you can't do because Mafsika Inyan. There's an interruption between the Klal Uprat. Have a Klal Uprat Hamiruchakim Zemizet. the klal and prat that are not juxtaposed, are not adjacent to each other. There's something interrupting between them. Kol klal uprat, the ruchokim izemizem, inan dino tam beklal uprat. You can't do a klal uprat when there's something that intervenes between the klal and the prat. Rava solved the problem differently. Rava Amar, the olam danim. You could have been done the klal uprat, even with the tamei shivatim in between, but v'chol is a rebuya yu. You are claiming you have a klal uprat here, and therefore the prat qualifies the klal. That assumes that chomishkav sheishkav alav is a prat. It's not true. That part of the pasuk begins, b'chol. B'chol is a ribui. It's not a prat. It's actually an inclusionary term rather than an exclusionary term. So you're wrong about two things. You're wrong about the fact that if it was a klal prat like this, you wouldn't darshan as a klal prat. I think you would. Even with the tamei shivatimim in between. Number two is, the whole premise of the question is mistaken because you said it was a prat and it's not a prat because it says b'chol. That's a riboy, not a miut, not a prat, and therefore it's not qualifying that which is before it. Why don't we say that the boil nida is the same din as her? Mahi lo chalakta ba ben maga'a the mishkava. By nida, that which she touches, and that which she lays upon, all have the same din, which is the tamei adam, the tamei bigadim. That they affect the person to affect his bigadim. That is by a nida, anyone who comes into contact with a nida, v'chol enegeya ba itma da'aref, just like anybody who comes into contact with her is tamei da'aref, and then any mishkav that she lays on, or shiva that she sits on, then v'chol enegeya mishkava yichabes begadav rechatz mamayim tamei da'aref. Whatever she comes into contact with, and whatever she lays upon have the same din. They both become av hatuma. They're both something that has the same level of tumah. So just like you didn't differentiate between coming into contact with her, which is mitamei adam and bigadim, so too when you touch that which she laid upon, you also become tamei to mitamei bigadim. L'chumra on the tzad chumra, which is there's no distinction between that which she lays upon and you come into contact with versus coming into contact with her directly. In both those cases, you're going to be tamei mitamei bigadim because she's an ava tumah. And so is that what she laid upon is an avatuma. They both affect you in the same way. So just like there's no distinction between coming to direct contact with the nida and coming to contact that which she laid upon. Apo, just like the bowl nida should be the same way. Lo tachlok bo ben magao the mishkavo. The tamei adam, or the tamei begadim, the kula. Let's say that it goes to kula. You just established that the mattress that he lays on, that mattress has a din of rishon tuma, not an avatuma. The lower grade tumah, it only affects ochlim and mashkim, doesn't affect adam and bigadim. That's because it's a rishon tumah. So just like whatever he lays upon is a rishon tumah, then so too what he touches, or that which comes into contact with him, should also only be a rishon tumah. I mean, it shouldn't be like coming into contact with a rishon tumah. It should be tamei ochlim and mashkim, meaning that if he touches something or something touches him, it should only affect Ochlim and Mashkim. It shouldn't make effect Adam and Kelim or Adam and Bigadim. Amarova Alav Lahat Ino Mashma. The word Alav is a Chumrah that says Utihi Nidata Alav. Alav means that to be Machmir on him, that he has a din like Nida. So we have to separate. So even though it's true by the Nida herself, that there's no distinction between her contact with her and contact with what she laid upon or that's what she sat upon, by the boil nida, there is such a distinction. You would have thought otherwise, but we have the extra word alav, which is zid nidata alav. Alav means it's a burden on him. The burden is that he's exactly like the nida, and that is that he is mitamei adam, mitamei kelim. He is an avatumah, just like she is, and affects all the other objects the same way she does. The difference is, in the latter part of the pasuk, which is called mishkav, sheishkav alav itma, that part of the pasuk differentiates him as far as that which he laid upon. When she lays on something, it's an alva tumah and has the same din as her, herself touching something. If you come into contact with the mattress or you come into contact with her, it's the same thing. Whereas for him, it's different. If you come into contact with him, he's an alva tumah and he affects you in that manner. If you come in contact with the mattress that he laid upon, then you are not tamei because it's only a rishon tumah and only affects oklim umashkim. Where it says, mipnei shein bolei nidot. The problem with the kuti over here is that we're afraid that his wife is a nida. And therefore, if he slept with his wife, then he's a boel nida. And that's the problem. So the issue that we have with the kutim is that they are boel nidot, and that therefore they have the impact of making things tamei, as the Mishnah says, which is that you are worried about it, but you're not worried b'vadai, only be safek, and therefore by biyad mikdash and truma, you're not going to be surei for bringing a korban, but nevertheless, there will be tuma misafek. But that's because they are bolei nidot. Atakulu bolei nidot, you know? Is every kuti a bolei nida? Well, it doesn't make sense. You have plenty of people who are not even married. They are not bolei nidot. So why do they have that din? So says, Amar Yitzchak Magdala b'nisuot shanu. Talking about the married individuals. So the kuti, where we have a problem, if he comes in contact with your truma, or he comes into contact with you, that we classify him as a bolei nida, that's if he's married. Because then there's a possibility that he was bolei nida. He's single, we're going to assume that he wasn't boiled in Nida, and he won't have these problems of Tum'ah. So Rabbi Yitzchak Magdala says that it is uniquely associated with Kutim that are married. Ben Yoshvot al-Dam, they keep all the lochot of Nida. That sounds like a positive thing. Tanya, I'm Rabbi Meir. Imen Yoshvot al-Kodam adam, takana gedolahi lahen. They sit and make themselves into a Nida on any Dam they see. Then they're in good shape, because then they're more machmir than we are. So why is there a problem? That's the problem that we discussed in the Mishnah, which is they'll see a sighting of red dam, which makes her into a nida, and then they'll add that on to that which they saw earlier, which was yellowish, or a type of dam that is not mitameh. So she had a sighting of a dam that's not tameh, she began counting her 7 days of tumat nida. In the third or fourth day, she has a sighting of red. She goes, oh, okay, it's in the middle of my days of Nida. It doesn't extend it. It's part of those 7 days. The truth is that that should have been the beginning of her 7 days, not the middle of her 7 days. And that's why it creates a problem. Tavar acher, yom sheposeket bo suforto l'minyan shim'ah. So that's the other problem that we have with them, is that they have this practice, which we do not subscribe to. And the Gemara asks why we don't subscribe to it in a minute. But the last day, where they had a sighting of Dam, as soon as they stop having a sighting, they count that as their first day of their Shiva Nikiyim. So for instance, to become a Zavah Gdola, you have to have a sighting 3 days in a row. But you could have a sighting on day one, sighting on day two, sighting on day three. After a sighting on day three, for the remainder of the day, she could be Tahor, she could have no sighting. So then what the Kutim say is, well, for the remainder of the day, she was Tehora. That's her first day because Miksat Hayom Kikulo. That's the beginning of their Shiva Nikiyim. We require what's called a Hefsek Tara. We require you to check immediately before the first day of your Shiva Nikiyim and to start that day B'Nikiyut and have that entire day B'Nikiyut to count towards the Shiva Nikiyim. You can't have a Miksat Hayom Kikulo. They had this practice of Miksat Hayom Kikulo. Matki Vlarami Barchama Vitisperenu. Why not? Va'ana Nami Nispere. Let her count and let us count it. The Kaimalan Miksat Hayom Kikulo. The halachic principle that they're relying upon, we subscribe to. Why aren't they right? That mixa tayom kikulo. Why doesn't it work? Amarava imkain shechvat zera desatar b'siva hecha mishkachava. The problem with that is then how are you ever going to have a case where semen can undermine, because it's always mixa tayom kikulo, and therefore that day can end b'tahara. So imkain, if it's true here that mixa tayom is kikulo, then why is it true that a Zav, this is a man, who's counting his Shiva Nikiyim to be Tahor from his Zavi missions that he had before, if he has a sighting of Keri, if he has a sighting of Shechvat Zera in the middle of his Shiva Nikiyim, we say that you lose that day. But why should you lose that day? Why can't that day also be included because of Miksat Hayom Kekulo? And therefore, why should there ever be a problem of Shechvat Zera undermining his Shiva Nikiyim of the Zav? Because if you say Miksat Hayom Kikulo, then whenever he had that sighting of Shechvat Zera during the middle of his Shiva Nikiyim, the remainder of the day is Miksat Hayom Kikulo, and that should count towards that day of whichever day of the 7 days it is, and it should not undermine his count at all. But we know it does undermine his count, and that shows you that it can't be that we hold the Miksat Hayom Kikulo. If you believe that Miksat Hayom Kikulo, then why should Shechvat Zera ever have an impact on a Shiva Nikiyim? That's because the Shechvat Zera comes out at some point during the day. There's still the remainder of the day. To which Rami Bar Chama says, no, you're understanding the pasuk incorrectly. Either Chazai v'pagu de yoma ochanami. You're right. If you had the sighting of Shechvat Zera in the middle of the day, ain't ochanami. What happens if he has the sighting of the Zera, Shechvat Zera, right before sunset? Then there's no Miksat Hayom Kikulo left, and that could be the case where it undermines the Shiva Nikiyim, where Shechvat Zera could cause a problem for Shivinikim. You're going to tell me now that the pasuk that tells us that Shechlet Zera undermined Shivinikim, you're going to tell me that that pasuk was only speaking about that case when it was close to Shkiyat HaChama? The pasuk never qualifies itself, never says it's in this narrow case that that's true. It says in, yes, that's right, that's what the pasuk is speaking about. Al Korchach, you have to explain it that way, you are compelled to explain it that way, because Shafkei Lekra, Diu Dochik Umukik HaNafshe. The pasuk forces it upon itself, meaning that it is a forced interpretation, but the force is because of the halakha that we know. And because of those halakha, we have to then explain the pasuk as being near Shkiyat HaChama, as otherwise the pasuk doesn't make sense. The only way to make heads or tails out of the pasuk is to say that it happened close to Shkiyah. Because if you're going to say Mikseh Dayom Kekulo, then Mikseh Dayom Kekulo can only have application if this pasuk can be true, and that can only be true if it happened at Shkiyat HaChama. So the pasuk forced that interpretation that it is only speaking about a case of close to Shkiyat HaChama. So now, Bai Rami Bar Chama. So now, using that idea that Shechlet Zera can undermine or can ruin the Shivinikim of a Zav, what about by a woman? Can the Shechlet Zera have the same impact on a woman in terms of undermining her Shivinikim? Now, as far as the Gzeret HaKaduv of a woman who sleeps with a man, that she has Tamei Tumak Shechlet Zera, that's not going to be an undermining factor because that's not Re'iyah. That is not Tumah that comes from a sighting. That's a tumah that comes from the fact that there's a gzeret katub and she has biyah, that she is tmei'ah, like the person who expelled the shechlet zera. The question is that after she expels the shechlet zera from her body, there she is tmei'ah as well, and that's what's called poletic shechlet zera. The understanding here is premised on the Mara's belief, and happens to be scientifically, it's probably true as well, which is that the semen is effective for 72 hours. 72 hours after it's expelled from the man, it still has the ability to fertilize an egg to create a conception. And so, therefore, any shechlet zera that is expelled by the woman within 72 hours after she had biyah, that shechlet zera makes her tmei'ah, because she's what's called poletet shechlet zera. She's expelling the shechlet zera from her body. Within the first 72 hours, it's still called shechlet zera. After the 72 hours, it's what's called masriach. It went bad, and it's not shechlet zera anymore. And therefore, it doesn't affect her in terms of tumah. And what Rami Bar Chama pointing out is, for the 3 days after shechlet zera was deposited in the woman, if it's discharged by the woman, she becomes a poletet shechlet zera and becomes tumeah. Question is, what's the nature of that tumah? And that's the question that's being asked here. Poletet shechlet zera, maushu tistor mitziva. That discharge of shechlet zera, that expelling of the shechlet zera, what is that din? Is it ro'ah haita misoteret? It's as if she had a sighting. It's as if she had a discharge, and therefore it would undermine her shivanikim as a zavag dola. Oh, dilma no gat haita velo setra. Maybe it's just from the contact. As the shechlet zera exits, it's an avatuma, and it comes into contact with her, and it makes her tmeah. But just because she's tmeah doesn't undermine her shivanikim. Shivanikim, if she becomes Tamei Tumat Mate in the middle of a Shivanikim, it doesn't affect her Shivanikim. Shivanikim means Naki from discharge. Naki from Tum'ah that comes from sighting. So that means that as long as it's not Tum'ah from a sighting, then she would not affect her Shivanikim. And that's the question here. Her Poletet Shechlet Zera, is that because she had a sighting? Or is that because if she came into contact with it? And the Nafka Mina will be that if it is a sighting, it will undermine her Shivanikim. If it's considered to be Nugat, as if she's touching it, then it won't affect her Shivanikim. How does she have Poletet Shechlet Zera while she is a Zavag Yidola counting Shivanikim? That's a problem because in order to become a Zavag Yidola, you need to have sighting of Dam for 3 days in a row. If she had sighting of Dam for 3 days in a row, that means she hasn't been together with her husband during that period of time because she is Tmeah. That's the case, then how is she having Poletet Shechlet Zera here in her Shivanikim if she hasn't been together with her husband for 3 days? So then what's the case? Rashi says the case is Kagon Sheshimsha Bizov. It was an illegal biyah. Her husband was together with her even though he wasn't supposed to be. And now she's counting her Shivanikim and she's Poletet Shechlet Zera. The Bali Tosafot would say you don't have to say that because there's a possibility that if she had biyah right before she began to become a Zava Gedola, then it could be that she's Poletet Shiklet Zera even after the time period in which she became a Zava Gedola. So for instance, if on Sunday afternoon she had Biyah with her husband, and now the Shiklet Zera clock has started, immediately after she finished with her husband, she has a sighting of Dam. So that Dam makes Sunday the first day of her 3 days of sighting. Then on Monday she has a sighting, and then on Tuesday she has a sighting. She now has 3 days in a row where she has a sighting. She's now a Zava Gedola. As far as the 72 hours of the Shiklet Zera, they're going to end after those 3 days have elapsed, which is Sunday afternoon was when the Shiklet Zera came in. So then 24 hours later is Monday afternoon. 48 hours later is Tuesday afternoon. Wednesday afternoon is 72 hours. That means all the way until Wednesday afternoon, the Shiklet Zera can have an impact on her and Poletet Shiklet Zera. She's already a Zava Gedola on Tuesday, because she had a sighting Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. By the end of Tuesday, she's already a Zava Gedola, and she could already start her count of Shivinikim, whether it's Miksat Yom Kikula, like the Kutim, or even absent that, Wednesday night, and then Wednesday morning already, she could already have started her Shivinikim, even according to the Prushim. And then when she has a sighting of Shiklet Zera, sometime in the early afternoon on Wednesday, she would still be within 72 hours of having the Shiklet Zera deposited in her. Therefore, she'd be impacted by the Tumat Shiklet Zera, even though she is a Zava Gedola. So that is the case that the Balei Tosafot was speaking about here. It doesn't have to be illegal. It could even be a legal biyah and have this question arise. Then Tosafot goes on to discuss a matter, which we're going to get to later on in the Masechta. I sent out the Efta Makorot here on Daf Lev and Gimel, but also later in the Masechta with the Daf Manbet, where the Gemara discusses it more extensively. Poletet Shiklet Zera has huge implications in terms of the way that we conduct ourselves today with regards to Nida. That's because we assume all of our women are Zavot Gedolot, and they have to wait Shivanikim. Question is, when can they start counting their Shivanikim? By Tosafot say over here, this is impactful. If you believe that Poletet Shiklet Zera can take place for 72 hours, that means within the first 72 hours of whenever she has the sighting of Nida, she cannot begin her Shivanikim because of the problem of Poletet Shiklet Zera, which if you think it's a riyah, if you think it's a sighting, will undermine her shivinikim and not allow her to start. For that reason, the Balei Tosafot say that you have to wait a minimum of 4 days before you can start counting your shivinikim. After a woman has a sighting of Dam, she has to wait now minimum of 4 days because it's a possibility she had biyah right before she had that sighting. If that's the case, then for the next 4 days, there's going to be possibilities of Poletet Shiklet Zera, which would undermine any Shivanikim. That means for the first 4 days, she cannot begin her count of Shivanikim. We'll see later on that the Trumat Deshin adds on a fifth day because of the fact that there might have been a sighting Ben HaShmashot. That sighting Ben HaShmashot, it's not clear whether it belonged to the previous day or the next day. And therefore, you would have the problem that it extends an additional day. Therefore, we today wait a minimum of 5 days based on that. We'll get into it when we go into Daf Membet. We'll discuss all the different Shitot HaRishonim with regards to this and how it came about that the Ramah paskened like this din of the Trumat Deshen to make it that we wait for 5 days. But the Balei Tosafot here discussed at least 4 days in the source for where we'd have to wait 4 days. That's what he says over here. Mikanisha Shishim Shav Rata Miyad Ein Ladat Chil Yispor Nikiyim Ad Achar Yom Dalet. A woman who has a biyah and then immediately after has a sighting, she should not begin her count of Shivanikim until 4 days later, at least 4 days, because you need 72 hours to clear Poletet Shiklet Zera. In order to have Shivanikim, you have to wait a day afterwards. You have to wait a minimum of 4 days, or you can't count your Shivanikim. Now, Tosafot says it only by the case where she had Biyah, and only the case where she has a sighting immediately afterwards. We're discussing a low plug situation. We make no differentiation. Whether she was together with her husband or not makes no difference. She still has to wait the minimum amount of time. And even if she didn't have sighting right after she had Biyah, we still make her wait that minimum amount of time. And even though the sighting didn't happen Ben HaShmashot, we still make her wait the minimum amount of time. So that low plug leads to us to a situation in which, at minimum, she needs to wait 4 days. And L'chumra, we wait even a fifth day because of the Ben HaShmashot problem. And that's the source for our practice that women have to wait 5 days of Tumah before they can start counting their Shiva Nikiyim. Now, in order to answer that question that was raised by Rami Bar Chama, Rava says, I'm a Rava from Khorfa Shibashta. He was so sharp and he was so smart that he didn't think through the answer to his question, which is, there is no answer to his question because it's impossible. Nami de Satra. Let's say you're right and that the Poletet Shekmezer is considered to be a Re'iyah, and if that way it undermines a day of Rosh Hashanah. Kama Tistor. But how much does it undermine? Tistor Shiva, say it ruins the 7 days, and then she's got to start again. Dayake Bo'ala. Why should she be any different than the Bo'el himself? That by the Bo'el, when Shekmezer that exits him, he's only Tameh for 1 day, and only undermines 1 day of his Shiva Nikim. Doesn't undermine any more than that. Azav, by society of Shekhmet Zerah, is only interrupted in a Shiva Nikim for 1 day. It's suspended for 1 day. So why should she be, lose her whole count of Shiva Yamim when the Zav only loses 1 day when he's the producer of the Shekhmet Zerah? So then, Tistor Yom Echad. Okay, so let's say it's the same thing and she only loses 1 day. Can't say that because the Pasuk says, Vachar Tidhar Arar Marachmona. After she waits the Shiva Nikim by the Parsha of the Zavag Dola, it says, Vim Tarami Zovab Safra La Shivat Yamim, 7 days, Vachar Titar. And afterwards she'll be Torah. Achar, what does Achar mean? Achar Lukulan. After all the 7 days, then she is Torah. Shlotei Tumah Mafsekeh Beneihem. You can't have any Tumah that interrupts it. And over here you have the Maletet Shekmezer that's interrupting. So Rava says, I don't even know what the question is. The question is she Riyah or Nogeya? He says, well, if you think it's a Riyah, we have no way to know what to do with her. It can't be 1 day that she ruins because it doesn't have Achar Tidhar, that she's after the 7 days of cleanliness, that's when she's Tor, because she had an interruption. It can't be 7 days because the Zav himself, who has a sighting of Shekhmet Zerah, he himself it only undermines one of his Shiva Nikim, doesn't undermine all of them. So why would it be here that it undermines the woman's entire Shiva Nikim? So therefore, it cannot be that it's a Riyah, it must be that it's a Nigiyah problem. So Rabbi Bar Chama says back to Rava, Litameich, Zav Gufeich, Isatar, how could it be by the Zav that it only interrupts 1 day? Doesn't he have a similar term by him, Litaharato, which is V'chitar Zav Mizobo, V'safar Lo Shivat Yamim, just like the woman who suffer La Shivat Yamim, then it says, by her, Bachar Titar, here it says, Litaharato, for his Tara, Amar Rachmanash, Leitumam Afseket Beneihem, that you can't have any interruption, you need Shiva Nikim in a row. So why is it that the Shekhmet Zerah over here only undermines a day, doesn't ruin his 7 days of Tara? So what do you have to say there by the Zav? Shalotei Tumat Ziva Mafseket Beneihem. It says he has to have 7 days of cleanliness and nothing interrupting. That is, he can't have any Zav emission. A Zav emission is an interruption, but any other emission is not an interruption. Hachanami Shalotei Tumat Ziva Mafseket Beneihem. So too by Achar Tidhar of the Zavak Dola, a seminal emission by the woman, Poletet Shekhmet Zerah, will not be an undermining of her Shiva Nikim. It will ruin 1 day, but that's it. It'll ruin that 1 day, but it doesn't affect her Shiva Nikim because the only thing that can interrupt Shiva Nikim is a sighting that got her to the Shiva Nikim, which is Zavag Dola or Dam. It's like by the Zav. The only sighting that can interrupt the Shiva Nikim is the sighting of Zav, which is what precipitated the need for the Shiva Nikim. Any other type of sighting does not have that impact. Now, obviously, Rova disagrees with that, and that's what the Bali Tosafot say over here, which is Rova Savard Lo Mashmam the Tarato Shlei Tuma Mafseket. He doesn't think that the word Tarato by the Zav has the same meaning as Achar Titar by the Nida. Achar Titar by the Nida tells you only after all of this is she Torah, and he needs Shiva Nikim in a row. He doesn't think the word Tarato has that same meaning by the Zav. That's why by the Zav you can't have an interruption of 1 day for the Shekhmet Zerah not affect the Shiva Nikim is because he doesn't have that demand. That'd be Shiva Nikim in a row, because of the Litarato does not have the same meaning as Achar Tidhar. Rami Bar Chama obviously disagrees and says Litarato is the same as Achar Tidhar. Just like by Litarato, Shekhmet Zerah is not an interrupter, so too by Achar Tidhar, Shekhmet Zerah will not be an interrupter. So we're not chayav for Biyat Mikdash for touching Truma, because it's a fake Tuma. Rapapa Ikla Litoach. Rapapa went to a place called Tuach. Amar I katsumim rabbanan ocha izel akabel pape. I wonder if there's a young Talmud Chacham over here, a young whippersnapper Talmud Chacham. I'm going to go greet him and I'm going to spend some time with him, give him some kavod by visiting him. Amrale ha'isabto. So this elderly woman said to him, Iga katsumim rabbanan. We have a big Talmud Chacham in town. V'rav Shmuel Shemei. And his name is Rav Shmuel. V'tani matnita. And he teaches Mishnayot. He is well versed in the materials of Aloha, Yehi Rava Ditave Kavate. And she says to him, Yehi Ratzon, that you should grow up to be like him. You should be as good as he is. So Amar midakarabarache li begavei. So Rava says, well, the fact that she gave me a brocha to be like him, then shmamina yirei shamayimu. This guy must be a real Talmud Chacham. He must be someone who has yirat shamayim. Must be someone who conducts himself properly. Sounds like somebody who's kedai to spend time with. Chazal agavei. So he went to visit him because of this praise that the older woman bestowed upon Rav Shmuel. Rava says, I think it's worthwhile for me to go see him and spend time with him. Ramalei Torah, he presented with him a shor, meaning that he presented him with a shechted, a shor, and he's going to have a big feast for Rava. Then Ramalei, and in the same time, he asked him the following question, Matzniten Ahadodi. He brought two Mishnayot and wanted to understand how I reconcile between these two Mishnayot. It's not our Mishnah. In Chaimin Aleim of Biad Mikdash, in Sofim Aleim et a Truma, Vnation Tumata Safek. Our mission says that there is no burning of the Truma here and no Korban for Biad Mikdash because it's all a Safek over here. So that means that we look at the Truma, Bol Nida, Vakuti as a Safek. Alma, Misfeka, Lo Sarfin and Truma. There you conclude that if you have a Safek Truma, you don't burn Truma. Virimini, and he says, is that really true? The Mishnah in Tarot says, Ashishash Sfeikot, Sorfim et Truma. There's six things where there's a Safek Tuma, and yet we're still Soreif the Truma. Al Safek Big Day Amaret. One of those in that list over there is a Safek, the clothing of an Amaret that came into contact with the Truma. And what Rav Shmuel was saying to Rav Papa is that this Kuti is no better than an Amaret. If the clothing of an Amaret make Truma, Tmeyami Safek, and you burn it based on that, then why does this Kuti, who's a Safek Bol Nida, who has the same status as an Amaretz, leaving aside the problem of Bol Nida, he just has Big Day Amaretz. And his Big Gadim should make it that the Truma is now Tmeya, Misafek, which still should be burnt. So how do you reconcile between these two Mishnayot? Amar Papa Yehira Ba, Tilitachel Hai Torah, the Shalma. He says, he ratzon that I should be able to eat this Torah, this ox in peace. Meaning that he had this great meal served before him. And now he challenged him with this question, and Rava's uneasy about the question, he has to answer it properly. So he says, here at Zon, that I should be able to eat this peacefully, and I'll give him the right answer, and I'll come up with the right answer. Hacha v'mayaskinan, what is he talking about here? Bekuti chaver. He's talking about a kuti who is versed in the dinim of Tumat Tara. He keeps the dinim of Tumat Tara, and therefore his bigadim are not big day amaretz, because he's like a prushi with regards to Tumat Tara. So Rav Shmuel says back to him, Kuti Chaver Bo Nida Mishabile? Wait a minute. If he's a Kuti Chaver in the Mishnah, then why are we worried about a Bol Nida? If he's really Makbin on Tuma Dara, and he keeps it like the Pushim, you think it's going to be a Bol Nida? Forgetting about the problems of Bol Nida. Bol Nida makes you Tameh. If he's Makbin on Tuma Dara, forget about the Halochas of the Koralochas of Bol Nida. There should be a problem just with Tuma Dara. So if he's a Kuti Chaver, how do we have a suspicion in the Mishnah that this guy is a Boel Nida? That seems far-fetched. And as Tosfot points out, that Rapapa felt that he could be a Kuti Chaver, that he's a Chaver in general, and happens to hear by Nida, he thinks he's doing the right thing, because his wife is Machmir, to sit on any type of Dam. It happens to be a Chumrat, Shemevilidei Kula, which he's not understanding, he's not aware of. But in general, he keeps the Lokot of Tuma and Tahara. It's just the problem in this Chumrah that they keep that would undermine his status as being Tahor because of the fact that he's a Chaver, because it could be that he's a Bol Nida because of the Chumrah that the women keep. Shavke, Rava left him. Vatalakamei to Rav Shimi Bar Ashi. Rapapa left him because he was embarrassed that he didn't have the right answer. Sounds like his Yiratzon didn't come to fruition. He didn't stay to eat the meal because he was so embarrassed that he didn't have the right answer. Or could be that after he finished the meal, he left, but he was upset and he was embarrassed by the fact that he didn't have the answer to the question. It came before Rav Shimi Bar Ashi, Amalei, my time alo mishnetle. He told over the whole story to Rav Shimi Bar Ashi. Rav Shimi Bar Ashi says to him, my time alo mishnetle bikuti shetaval velav daras al bigdei chaver. Why don't you explain the case as a case where the kuti went to the mikveh and then he came up and he stood on the bagadim of the chaver. And then the begadim of the chaver then touched the truma. And that's why we have a problem over here. And even though you could have explained the case of the kuti simply touching the truma itself, Tosafot says the Mishnah doesn't sound like that. The Mishnah sounds like it is some derivative of the kute that touched the truma. And that's why the Gemara sets up the case this way over here, as being a case where he stood or sat or laid upon the big day chaver, and then the begadim of the chaver touched the truma, which aligns with the case that the Mishnah is speaking about. Imishum tumat amaretz. If the problem is tumat amaretz, hatavil lay. He went to the mikveh. He went to the mikveh, the tumat amaretz is gone now, because he went to the mikveh and he's cleared that up. Imishum boil nida. And if he's boil nida, going to the mikveh is not going to solve his problem, because they boil nida is tamei v'shivat yamim. Going to the mikveh is not going to change that. He still needs the 7 days in terms of being a boil nida. So he's a safek boil nida. And the fact that he stood on the clothing of the chaver makes it that the clothing of the chaver now becomes tamei from a tumat boil nida. If that's the case, then when it touches the truma, it affects the truma misafek. And the safek is the following. Safek baal bikarov. Safek lo baal bikarov. Safek as to whether he had biyah with his wife recently, or he didn't have it with her recently. If he didn't have biyah with her recently, then he's not a boil nida. The 7 days have elapsed already, and he's no longer tamei, and he went to the mikvah just now. So then the tuma of amaretz is gone, and the tuma of bol nida is gone. Or maybe baal bikarov. Maybe he had biyah with her recently. If he had biyah with her recently, maybe he's still within the 7 days of tuma that it affects the bol nida. And that's why it would affect the clothing. Imtim salomar baal bikarov. Even if he had biyah recently, safek yishlimato yarok, safek lo yishlimato. The question is, did his wife do something wrong? Did his wife then count the 7 days of nida, starting from a colored blood that was not deemed to be nida, and then she just added on the red dam afterwards and said, oh, I'm in the middle of my tuma, I don't need to start again. Or, lo ishtumato. Or maybe not. Maybe the case is she just saw red. And she saw red, she counted her nida properly. So you have a fake sveka over here. That's what the Gemara says, I'll be sveka sveka. Once the fake is, did he have biyah recently enough that he's still considered to be a bol nida within the first 7 days? And number two is, even if he did have biyah that recently, maybe she didn't miscount her nida. The whole problem of bol nida over here is because we're afraid that the woman, Isha Kutit, counted her days of nida improperly because she started with colored blood that wasn't nida, and then subsumed within that red blood that was nida that should have reset or restarted her 7 days, and she didn't restart them. That makes her husband into a bol nida. You have a sveik sveika, but sveik sveika lo sarfina and truma. By a safek truma, you might burn it. But not by sveik sveika of truma, you're not going to burn it. And even though, as the Baal Yatosef will point out, we have plenty of cases where we have safek truma that is not burnt. And so the question over here is only because the kuti of our Mishnah has the same din as an amaretz. And that Mishnah in Tarot explicitly says that if it's safek tumat amaretz, that you do burn it. So that's the nature of the question. Not a question in general about safek truma, because safek truma sometimes is burnt, sometimes it's not. But our case here should be identical to the case of the amaretz, because he's a kuti over here, and he's no better than an amaretz, and therefore he should have the same din as the amaretz. And then why don't you burn his truma? The answer is that it's really a sfeik sfeik over here. The sfeik of why he's tamei is a bol nida, and bol nida with regards to the isha kuti is a sfeik sfeika, and therefore we don't burn the truma. So Rav Papa says back to Rav Shimi Bashi, even if I gave that answer, it's not a good answer. Because as soon as the guy comes out of the mikveh, puts on his clothing, his clothing becomes big day amaretz again. And big day amaretz are mitamei truma. If that's the case, then you haven't solved your problem because you have big day amaretz in the picture again. Damar mar, big day amaretz, midras leprushim. That the big day, the begadim of an amaretz, had the din of tumat midras, which means like an ava tuma for prushim, and they will affect them, affect the person, which then will affect the truma if he comes into contact with them. Amalei bekuti arum. It's a case where he came out of the mikveh naked. So he came out of the mikveh naked, and then on his way to go put on his clothing, he laid on the clothing of the chaver, and then he went and put on his clothing. So as far as the chaver is concerned, the only issue is the contact with this amaretz, or this kuti, that stepped on his clothing after he walked out of the mikveh. As far as tumat amaretz, he went to the mikveh, we're done with that. As far as tumat boel nida, that could still be a factor, but that's a sveika. And the other possibility is that he's wearing clothing now that make him into big day amaretz, and he's going to ruin it. The answer to that is, he's naked, he didn't put his clothing on yet. Since he didn't put his clothing on yet, that's not a factor in the question as to whether it is tumat here. The only question is he a bol nida, Or is he a Tamei Tumat Ha'am Aretz? Going to the mikveh solves the problem of Tumat Ha'am Aretz. The fact that it's a fake sfeika with regards to the Boel Nida makes it that we're not going to be Sareif Truma on it. It's going to be Sefek and not Sreifa, even though he's deemed to be like an Ha'am Aretz. And the problem of his Bigdei Ha'am Aretz are not relevant here because it's a case where he's naked when he steps or walks, lays, or sits upon the Bigadim of the Chaver. And then only afterwards do those Bigadim touch the Truma. And that's the Sefek that we have here. And we don't burn it because it is a Sfek Sfeka. And Tosva points out that they could have answered simply that he put the clothing in the mikveh with him too, because then that would be tahor, or that he put on the bigadim of the chaver. If that's the case, then it wouldn't be a problem of bigdei Ha'am Aretz. The Gemara gave another solution, which was that he was still naked, and so therefore the bigdei Ha'am Aretz is not a factor over here. All right, next Mishnah. Bnot snukim, bizmach nagul aleche b'darchei avotehon, then arien ke kuti ot. If they follow the ways of their fathers, then they have a din like a kutit, which we already saw in the first Mishnah on the Perek, what the din of a kutit is. So the wives of stukim, as distinct from kutim, kutim we already discussed in the first Mishnah what they are, stukim are a sect of Jews that didn't subscribe to Torah Shebaal Peh or to the drashot chachamim in the psukim. So if this woman who is keeping the laws of Nida is subscribing to the worldview of her father, and follows in his religious path, then she has a din, like a kutit, like we saw in the previous Mishnah. If she chooses to follow the way of the chachamim, then arein ki Yisraelit. Then she has a din, like a regular Jewish woman. Rabbi Yossi omer, lo lamein ki Yisraeliot. The default situation is that they are like a Jewish woman. Unless they explicitly declare, or they indicate they're going to follow in the ways of their father. Ibayeluhu. Stamamai. For the Tanakama, what is the default scenario? Tashma, benot stukim, bizmachno agot aleche b'darchei avotehon, arein kekutiot. The first line of the Mishnah says, if they choose to follow the ways of their fathers, then they have a din, like an isha kutit, like the first Mishnah. Ha stama, if they didn't follow where they did, said nothing, then ki Yisraelit, we treat her like a regular Jewish woman. Ema seifa, but what about the next line in the Mishnah? Parshul aleche b'darchei Yisrael, if they go and follow in the ways of the chachamim, then are in Kisraeliot. Then they have a din like a Jewish woman. Hastama. Then you would infer from that that the default is that they are kutiot. Unless she actively engages to be like a Jewish woman and follow the chachamim, or otherwise be treated like a kutiot. From the Mishnah, you don't have any diuk, because the Mishnah dealt with the two cases where either she declares herself following her father, or declares herself following the chachamim. What it doesn't address is the case of default, where she doesn't say anything. What is her status? Tashma, you can learn it from the latter half of the Mishnah. That's not. Rabbi Yossi omer l'olam hein ki Yisraelit ad she yifarshu lelechet b'darchei avotehen. They have a default status of being a Jewish woman unless they declare otherwise. Unless they declare they're going to follow the ways of their fathers and become stukim. Michlal, you would infer from that the Tanakama savar stama kutiot, that the default status is that they're like kutiot, shma mina. So what the Gemara say is, you can see from Rabbi Yossi's statement that he's arguing on the Tanakama. What's that point of difference between them? They both agree that if she declares that she's following her father's ways, that she has a din like a stukit or a kutit now, and not like a Yisraelit. So they both agree with that. What's the distinction between them? What's the default going into that situation? According to Rabbi Yossi, the default going into the situation is that she is the Israelite and she is considered to be like a Jewish woman, unless we find evidence to the contrary that she's following in her father's ways. The argument then between the Rabbi Yossi and the Tanakama is that the Tanakama disagrees with that. It says, Stam, she's a kutit. The default says is that she's a kutit unless she declares herself to be following in the ways of the Chachamim. And that's how we understand now the Chachamim's position, is that the default is that she's a kutit unless she demonstrates otherwise to us. There was an incident in which a stuki was stopping to speak to the Kohen Gadol in the shuk. A pack of saliva, some spit came out of his mouth, and it landed on the clothing of the Kohen Gadol. The face of the Kohen Gadol went ashen, was pale, he was besides himself about this. And Rashi says, v'chorolo, he was angry, he was upset beyond because of this, shenitma begadav, that his clothing became tamei from this spittle of the stuke. The Rashi said he was worried about the fact that the rogue made his begadim tamei. The tail end of the Tosafot of Tipukle on Daf Lamed Aleph and Aleph mentioned that if the spittle was that from a bol nida, it has the status of a zav, and therefore the spittle that hits his begadim would not only make the begad tamei, but also make him tamei because he'd be nosea rok hazav, and it infect both the begadim and him. And therefore Tosafot says that the Kohen Gadol was upset because he thought both his begad and he became tamei, because he was nosea the rok of a bol nida, which would make him and his begadim tamei. And similarly, by the rok of an amaretz, according to the way the Baal Tosafot learned, that it is the din like a zav, then it also would have been meant to make him and his bigadim. And so the question at hand is both him and his bigadim, not just bigadim, like Rashi explained. So the Ritva says that he didn't worry about the tumah of himself. And why Rashi doesn't mention it is because he could go to the mikvah easily. Taking the bigadim to the mikvah and then having to dry them out afterwards would have made it a much more involved process. And therefore, yeah, according to Rashi, they're both to make him, he and the bigadim. But the thing that really got him angry was the bigadim aspect of it. The kadam etzel ishto, he decided to take matters into his own hands. He says, this guy's a tztuki. And if he's a tztuki, he could be a bol nida. Bol nida, the saliva landed on my clothing. I'm in trouble now because he made the clothing tamei. So he ran to check with this guy's wife. If we consider his wife to be a kutit, then the tztuki is a bol nida. He's a bol nida, then the saliva is going to affect the Kohen Gadol negatively. Vamralo, so the wife of the tztuki says to the Kohen Gadol, even though they are, speaking about herself as well, speaking in third person, even though the stuki women are stukim, matyarot mina prushim, they're afraid of the prushim, marotam the chachamim, and therefore they show all their marotam to the chachamim, or basically, they follow the rules of the chachamim with regards to dinei nida. They get all their shailot answered by the prushi rabbis, and not by the stukim. And therefore, we follow the dinim of nida, like the chachamim prescribe. That's the case, then her husband's definitely not a bol nida. She follows the halacha according to the chachamim. The Rashba questions why she's believed, because she's a chashud badavar. Why should she be believed about the matter? And why didn't he just ask the tztuki directly the question? So the Ritva answers that the reason he didn't ask the tztuki himself is because the tztuki saw the look on his face, and he knew that the Kohen Gadol was bothered by it. Therefore, when he gave an answer, he would be biased in his answer in order to alleviate the problem. The other hand, if the Kohen Gadol was his wife, who didn't know the reaction of the Kohen Gadol, he considered that to be Messiah lefi tumo. They were just having a discussion, a nice discussion that has no halachic implications, because she didn't know that there was halachic implications to the matter. And therefore, he could believe her as an Eide Echad Ne'emenet B'Yisurim, because she's really not no gaya but davar in this situation. She'll tell the truth because it has no impact on this story, because she was not aware of the background to the story. And you can add on top of that, the Ran notes that it was all a din d'rabbanan, and that's why Messiah lefi tuma works over here, and we can believe her, even though if it was a din d'oraita, we may not have believed her. Now that's the way Rashi explains it. You look in the Marsha in the back in the Chidushei Agadot, he suggests that when it went back to Ishto, it was not the wife of the tztuki, but rather he went back to his own wife, and his wife of the Kohen Gadol says, I know the tztuki women, I'm familiar with them, and I know they ask all their shailot to the chachamim. Because the Marsha says the fact that she speaks about the tztuki women in the third person makes it sound like it's someone who's not a tztuki woman, and that's why he says he favors the explanation that it's the wife of the Kohen Gadol and not the wife of this tztuki. We have a similar refrain now, Amar Rabbi Yossi, Bikinanu Bahen Yotermiakol. We know everything about the tztukim. We understand what they do. Because Vahain Marot Dam the Chachamim. And I know that they show all of their Marot Dam to the Chachamim. Kosmi Shachat, Shaitabishkunotenu, the exception of one woman who lived in our neighborhood, Shlot Herat Dam the Chachamim, who didn't show her Dam to the Chachamim, Umeita, and she died. Whether she died because she wasn't showing her Marot Dam to the Chachamim, or she died, meaning that you don't have to worry about her anymore because she's not around. So all the women that are stukiyot over here, you don't have to worry about them because I know they keep dinei nida like we would prescribe. And therefore their husbands are not boel e nida. And they themselves are not nidot because they take care of tumata nida. So over here too, the Kohen Gadol is assuaged by the fact that the wife of this stuki says, I keep the laws of nida, just like the prushim. And if that's the case, then the spittle that came out of the stuki and landed on the Kohen goes, oh, it's not problematic because he's not a boel nida. According to Rashi, Rabbi Yossi is just a confirmation of what we heard from the wife of the stuke that the Kohen Gadol approached. According to the Marsha, it's actually a similar scenario, which is the familiarity that the Prushim had with the stukim. Here the Kohen Gadol's wife is declaring it. Here Rabbi Yossi is declaring it, that he's aware that the women show their marot to the Chachamim, and therefore they're keeping nida like the Chachamim. And the wife of the Kohen Gadol had said a similar thing, that she believes that the women of the Tzukim keep the halachot of Nida just like the Prushim do. Tosfos does point out there's still a problem. If you treat them like Yisraeliot, the Tzukim clearly don't darshan Isha, the Isha that we saw in yesterday's daf, to tell you that even a Ketana who has a sighting as a din of Nida. We saw that the Kutim don't darshan it. Tzukim certainly don't darshan things that are drashat Chazal, that are not part of Torah Shebichtav. So how could it be that we don't treat them like kutiot if they don't subscribe to that din of isha v'isha? Because that was the premise for why we made the takana by the kutiot. It's because of that problem that they don't take care of that type of tuma. So what are you going to do over here with the tzukim? So Tosfos in the end says it's still a far-fetched issue. And since the women show all their marot to the chachamim and keep nida properly, because of that far-fetched lo shkia case, we're not going to make them all tmeim. The Gemara says, asks a similar question that we saw before in our Gemara, the tipik lemishum tzinora adam aretz. Forget about the fact that he is a tzuki and maybe he's a bol nida. What about an amaretz? We have a din that the spittle that comes out of an amaretz has the din that he makes it tamei. So it should be tamei for being an amaretz. Nothing to do with his being a bol nida of a tzukit woman. And as Tosfos points out, tzinora adam aretz is a unique din by amaretz. Because it's something that we can be makbid on, to be careful of their spittle or their saliva getting on us. But with regards to things like mishkav, moshav, and heset of the amaretz, that would be way beyond what we could manage in terms of a gezerat chachamim. Therefore, they were not gozer tuma with regards to those issues of the amaretz. And the reason that big the amaretz are midras for the prushim is not because of the amaretz himself, but because of the chashash that maybe his wife, who is a nida, sat on them. And that's what caused the tumah over here of Mishkav and Moshav. Because that we do have, that the wife of the Amaretz, who could be a nida, sat on them, that's the possibility. But the Amaretz himself does not have a din of Mishkav and Moshav. Although, Rav Moshe Mipontis says that L'shum davar lo asu Amaretz kizav, that the Amaretz is no din like a zav at all. He takes that concept to the utmost and says an Amaretz has no tumah like a zav, the exception of his clothing, and that's not because of him. That's because his wife possibly sat on them. And Sinora, the spittle that comes out of him is Tamei, not because we treat him like a Zav, not because it's one of the Mayonot Zav, but because it touched his lips on the way out. And since it touched his lips on the way out, he is Tamei, and if he is Tamei, then the spittle becomes Tamei as a liquid that touched him, as opposed to what the Baal Tosafot say, and they say they don't agree with what Rav Moshe Mipontis says. And one of those proofs is from our Gemara here, where the Gemara is asking that the tzinora should affect the clothing and the Kohen Gadol. That would only be true if it was an avatuma, not if it was tamei, because it touched the lips of an amaretz. And therefore, the reason the spittle is considered to be tamei is because we treat him like a zav. And a zav who has liquids that come out from a mayan, where it pools and then comes out, has the same din as the zav himself, and it's an avatuma. And we make the spittle of the amaretz like that. And even though we treat him like a zav for that, we don't treat him like a zav for mishkav, moshav, and all those other things, because it would be a gzeirah, shein atzibor yachol amodba. And since it would be impossible to manage, they didn't institute it there. But he still does have a din of zav with regards to the spittle. And the spittle is tamei, not because it touched him, but because it was like the liquids of zav that had been expelled by the zav. As a rabbi, it's stuki chaber. Gives the same answer that Rava gave to Rav Shmuel, that it was a, he said there was a kuti chaver. Over here, Rabbi says it was a stuki chaver. Amarava, stuki chaver, boel nida mishavilei. Ah, he says it's stuki chaver. So that's why he's not treated like an amaretz. He's makbina tumatara, and he's boel nida. Doesn't make any sense. Why'd you be choshish that he's boel nida if he's a stuki chaver? It shouldn't be a consideration at all. Why is the Kohen Gadol running to find out from his wife whether he was boel nida or not? And Rabbi will give the same explanation that we saw in Rapapa before from the Baalei Tosafot, that in general he was makbina tumatara. And with regards to Nida, they thought they were being machmir. and therefore he thought he was doing good also, and he doesn't realize that he could be a bol nida, even though he's makbid on the dinim of tumadara. Elam arava regel havo. It was during the shloshet regalim that it happened. The going of those out of the shuk, and this stuke got spittle on his clothing when it was the regel. And we have a din from the Gemara in Chagiga that teaches us that tumat amaretz beregel kitara shavinu rabbanon. Rabbanon made it that tumat amaretz, while it applies all year round, during the regel, they did away with tumat amaretz. This whole gzera takana was not applicable during those times, both out of necessity because the amaretz flooded Yerushalayim as part of the aliyah of the regel, and anybody who was trying to keep tumat tara would have impossible to be keeping it because of the amaretz that are around. And also because there was somechen on the following pasuk that's found by Pilegesh Begibah, Tichtiv, Vayaseif, called Ish Yisrael Elair, Ki Ish Echad Chavirim. They all gathered together to launch the attack as one man, Chavirim, as if they're all Chavirim. Hakdu Basakulan Chavirim. Since they gathered together as a single unit, and the pasuk calls them Chavirim, as if they were all friends, a play on the word Chaver is someone who keeps the Tumah Tara. So when the Klal Yisrael gets together in large gatherings, everybody is considered to be a chaver. Everybody is on the same level. Therefore, we don't have distinctions of Tumat Tara from the Haaretz versus the Pushim. Everybody is leveled out of playing field and everybody is Tahor. And so to over here on the Regel, which is a Zman Asifa, the Ame Haaretz don't have a din of their normal din of Tumah or Gezerot Chachamim with regards to Tumat Haaretz. Therefore, the Tztuki, who got spittle on the Kohen Gadol's clothing, we were not worried about Tumah Tara because it's the regel. We're worried about Bol Nidah because he's a Tztuki. And the Kohen Gadol went to check that out, either by asking the wife of the Tztuki, according to Rashi, or according to the Marsha, or asking his own wife, who said she was familiar with the Tztuki women that kept the halachot of Nidah like the Prushim. Okay, we're going to stop here, but in the Mishnah on the top of Lamed Daled Amud Aleph.